Today is December 29th, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 138, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor and co-publisher and stuff. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you would like to comment or question anything about the show, you can actually comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at AWR at macobserver.com.
You know, I'm thinking that your title, which, you know, of course, we can make as long as we want, I'm thinking that it should be editor, publisher, dapper man about town.
Ooh, I like that. Dapper man about town. And I am a dapper man about town.
Indeed.
Except for the part about being dapper.
You know, it's a relative term.
So it is. And let's see now. You can follow me on Twitter at TMO Brian. That's TMO Brian with a Y. TMOBRYAN.
And you can find out what's going on in my little head at Twitter also. And that's twitter.com/jgamet. So that's J-G-A-M-E-T.
You know, speaking of what's going on, the people that are following you know this, but the people that don't follow you are wondering what the heck happened to our being back on schedule.
Yeah, how about that? All right, sorry, everyone, that's kind of my fault. And it's amazing the lengths that I will go to delay podcasting, isn't it?
It is. What did you do this time? Go ahead and tell everybody.
All right, so the deal is, I was on my way to speak at the Mac user group in Boulder, and just to make this story even more exciting, I had Lisa Snyder King in the car with me. She was speaking at the event also, and my Volvo lost traction on the gravel road going up the mountain. The car started to slide, and I ran out of road before I could get it back under control, and I decided to test the safety features built into the Volvo by hitting a boulder.
Oops.
Yeah, and so that really just kind of slowed everything down for my whole schedule.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen, and fortunately you were okay, though. Your car got totaled, but you personally were okay.
Right. We were both fine. We walked away with a bruise or two each, and it was kind of interesting because I had to figure out an alternative route outside of the vehicle because the frame was bent so much that none of the doors would open.
Well, this is where your training as a police officer probably came in handy.
Right, because everyone knows the first thing you do is bail out the window, right?
Right.
No, wait, you shoot out the window. Oh, and I didn't have a gun.
Oh, no, and Jeff actually was a police officer. Is that a secret?
Not anymore, no.
And why were you with Lisa Snyder King?
We were both speaking at the Mac user group in Boulder that night. She was going to be talking about her new book, Photoshop CS4, The Missing Manual. And I was going to be talking about the iTunes for Audiophiles session that I'm doing at Macworld Expo next week.
And did you happen to have anything to do with that book?
As a matter of fact, I did.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah, so I pretty much cleared my schedule for, what was that, about 3 months?
Just about, it seems.
Yeah, to help out and make sure that Lisa's book got finished on time so it could get on the presses so that everyone can go buy a copy at Macworld Expo. So, you know, so here's the selfish part of me saying, please go buy a copy of the book, because if you're buying copies of the book, that means that royalties are going in and that my insanely exorbitant, I can't even say the word tonight.
Exorbitant. I'll say
thank
you.
Bill to Lisa can get paid.
Which, you know, that would be good.
Well, sure.
Does this have anything to do with a silent keynote?
No, this didn't have anything to do with silent keynote, actually. But
good.
But yeah, that came along well after the whole book thing was finally wrapped up, and that was after the whole Komug adventure. And so anyone that went to Komug expecting to hear me speak that night, I'm sorry. Dude, I was standing on the side of the road waiting for a tow truck. Sorry.
Well, we're just glad you're okay, man. And but the end result is that between the holidays and Jeff's accident, which happened on a Friday, we did get thrown off our schedule again. But here we are, and we're back, and we're going to do, I think, an end of 2008 wrap-up a little bit later this week.
I think that sounds like an excellent idea.
Yeah, it's all very, very, very exciting. And we'll even talk about Silent Keynote in the context machine.
Well, that'll be exciting.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, then let's hit it.
Despite Brian's insistence, you really can buy an iPhone at Walmart. The lawsuit Express stopped to pick up Apple, Microsoft, and Google. Juvenile humor really does sell at the App Store. SciStar claimed Apple didn't copyright Mac OS X. And yes, it's Macworld Expo time again.
Retail powerhouse Walmart began selling Apple's iPhone 3G in its stores on Sunday, December 28th. Perhaps not so coincidentally, that was the same day that Satan reportedly put in an order at Amazon.com for long underwear and a, quote, really warm coat, unquote. The company, that's Walmart.
I can't stop. You just have to wait. Okay, now you can go.
I like to spring some of these jokes on Jeff when he completely unawares, and that was the case this time.
It was. And thank you for entertaining me.
You're welcome. The company, that would be Walmart, is offering both the 8-gig and the 16-gig model at a discount, though a slim one at only $2 off Apple's list price. Rumors surfaced in October, that Apple and Walmart had struck an iPhone 3G distribution deal. And in December, Walmart employees unofficially confirmed that the iPhone was on its way. The distribution deal will potentially bring the iPhone to an even wider audience, since Walmart does have many stores in many locations where Apple, AT&T, and every mom and pop retailers are missing.
And I just have to add, I really like the caption that I wrote that goes along with this article on the TMO website, which is along the lines of, now you can get your iPhone and your pork rinds at the same time. Apple, Microsoft, and Google are all looking at more potential court time now that Cygnus Systems is suing the companies over claims that they are violating a patent it holds. The patent in question describes using icons to preview files before opening them, which is a feature common to many applications and operating systems. The suit specifically identifies Mac OS X and its CoverFlow feature, Apple's Safari web browser tabbed interface, the iPhone interface, Microsoft's Windows Vista and Internet Explorer 8 web browser, and Google's Chrome web browser for Windows. Cygnus Systems is asking the court for the usual damages, including compensation for the infringement, court costs, a permanent injunction against the named company selling infringing products, along with anything else the court feels like tossing its way. The likelihood, however, that the court would issue an injunction prohibiting the sale of products that are named in the suit is slim.
Indeed. Developer Joel Kamm announced over the weekend that he sold some 38,927 copies of iFart Mobile on Christmas Day. Sales of the sound effect and prank application released through Infomedia Inc. began growing by leaps and bounds in the days leading up to Christmas, but as adults and, well, really apparently boys and girls alike opened up their iPod touches and iPhones, those sales increased by threefold on Christmas Day itself. The app is pretty much what you think it is. It makes farting sounds. It makes farting sounds. That's what it does. And you can choose the particular sound you want. It makes farting sounds.
Ah.
And you can choose the particular farting sound that you want with a nifty slot machine reel. Better yet, it features a timer for trying to impress your friends with your adolescent humor. I'm going to try that again. Better yet, it features a timer for trying to impress your friends with your adolescent humor and an alarm feature that lets out a fart sound when the iPhone is picked up. Hooray! According to numbers released by Mr. Com, iFart Mobile sold some 113,885 copies through December 25th, with almost half, more than 58,000, selling just on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day alone. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Oh, my God. What a story to have to follow.
God bless the baby Jesus.
Oh, my. SciStar is asking the courts to dismiss Apple's copyright infringement suit against SciStar on the basis that Apple failed to actually get a copyright for Mac OS X. The request came in court documents filed as the company's answer to Apple's First Amended complaint, but astute listeners will have correctly guessed that Apple has filed the registered copyrights for both Mac OS X Server version 10.5 Leopard and Mac OS X Leopard 10.5. No surprise that, but SciStar still claimed in its court documents that Apple, quote, is prohibited from bringing action against SciStar for the alleged infringement of one or more of the plaintiff's copyrights for failure to register said copyright with the Copyright Office as required, unquote, by law. No word yet if SciStar will next claim that Steve Jobs is really an alien and therefore not entitled to sue the company within the United States. And I'm assuming that would also include within the atmospheric boundaries of our planet.
Eight to a year later. Now, to be honest, this may not be news to everyone, but Apple announced earlier in December that after 2009, it will no longer participate in Macworld San Francisco. I know, it's true, though. And even worse, Steve Jobs won't even give us the courtesy reach around of presenting the company's last keynote at this, its last Macworld. The nerve. Apple Indeed. Said in a press release that it no longer needed the shows to reach its customers, citing the long reach of its fleet of highly successful Apple stores. The company also noted that it's been pulling out of many trade shows over the years. Macworld San Francisco was effectively the last such show Apple participates in. For its part, IDG quickly released a statement stressing that Macworld 2010 was still on with or without Apple, and you can expect the Mac Observer to be there covering it with or without a Steve note. Or a fill note. While this may not really be news, neither Jeff nor I have yet talked about it on the show, so we include it here today for your edification. And that's town. Boy, Jeff, we are just like flubbing up all over the place. And we practice this stuff.
No one's going to believe that. Not for a minute. Believe that.
Yeah, we've had all kinds of mistakes. Be that as it may, that sound means that it's time for the context machine. And this is where Jeff and I delve a little or sometimes a lot more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
And I can only imagine how this is going to go, considering how difficult it was for us just to get through the news.
Indeed, to be fair, though, there were fart stories in the news.
There were.
So
apparently I'm 12.
Let's do the last story first.
Macworld?
Yeah, let's do Macworld.
All right, we can start there. I'm okay with going backwards.
Is Apple dying? Is Steve dying? Is Macworld dying?
All right, do you want my take on this whole thing?
Of course.
Okay, here's what I think. I think that Apple has decided that they don't have enough control over the way they release information about products when it comes to Macworld Expo. I think the timing doesn't work for many other product releases, and that for them, it's simply time to move on and do things a different way, namely having the by-invitation media events. And I think that as soon as the company as a whole decided it was time to move on for Macworld Expo, Steve Jobs lost complete interest and said, I'm not even going to do the keynote. I don't think it has anything to do with his health at all.
That's what Ted said.
And I agree with Ted.
We're talking about Ted Lendow, who wrote a column. Matter of fact, Ted's column, he closed it with basically the exact sort of arguments that I've been thinking of myself, and because Ted wrote them, I didn't bother writing a column about it. But the long and the short of it is that you know, Steve in particular has hated Macworld forever because he doesn't control it. And he's all about control. Steve wants to control every aspect of his company. He wants to control every aspect of the customer interaction. He wants to control, in some ways he wants to even control what we do with the cities. With our Macs. He wants us to think differently his way. He wants us to make insanely great products and insanely great things with his computers his way. You know, and that's a big part of what motivates this guy.
You think?
Yeah, I do. And they don't control Macworld.
No, they don't. They show up and they have to make product announcements on the Macworld schedule.
Yep. You know, and of course, it was from Apple's standpoint, it was even worse when there were two shows because they were expected to deliver killer keynotes twice a year.
Right.
And, you know, and even above and beyond the schedule, you know, a lot of people do think that Apple controls Macworld, that that Macworld is effectively an Apple show, and it's not. IDG World Expos owns it. They, of course, bend over backwards for Apple. I'm pretty sure that Apple gets free floor space, for instance.
I've heard that from several places.
Yeah, so, you know, which... You know, that's a lot of floor space, and that floor space might be free to Apple, but it's not free to IDG. IDG always bends over backwards for Apple because that's the kind of business partner Apple it is. Apple wants every business partner they have to bend over backwards for them. And despite the fact that that is the case, that IDG does bend over backwards for them, they still don't control it. And Steve just doesn't like that. He's often talked about the reach of the Apple stores. In relationship to its importance to Macworld, so I don't know. This really shouldn't be a big surprise. I think that the economy may have precipitated the timing of this particular pullout.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, the economy has been sucking for quite a while now, and you're seeing all kinds of companies pulling out of expo and trade show events.
Right, and not because of the trade show itself. I mean, Macworld is a very successful show. It's one of the largest shows still around.
Right.
So, you know, this isn't necessarily a fault with Macworld. It's just the expense of showing at a Macworld. And, you know, Apple may get its floor space for free, but they've got tons of employees that they've got to organize. The PR department has got to spend a bunch of time figuring out who they're going to ignore at the trade show.
what you're talking about.
that takes organization and a lot of time to do that stuff. There's equipment that's got to be set up. I mean, there are all sorts of expenses that go in to being at a show, especially when you're doing something the size of what Apple's doing. Steve's time, the presenting, putting together the keynotes, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's just, it's very time intensive. It's very money intensive. And while I wish that Apple had not made this decision, I think it's perfectly in keeping with Steve Jobs' approach to life and business.
It is. And you know, honestly, I'm sorry to see Apple leaving the expo. Because if nothing else, that was the one time of year that the Apple faithful could get that FaceTime. And I think that was a really important thing for a lot of people.
It's important for us, but Apple doesn't care about that.
Well, that's very true. Because if they did care about that, they wouldn't have made an announcement that they're pulling out of the expo and won't be there next year.
Steve probably even resents the fact that we get together because we're getting together on our own terms. You know, doing our own thing, and Apple doesn't control it. As a matter of fact, I mean, you know, it's, you look at Apple charging to use the dot connector, Apple as a company doesn't like people doing stuff on their own. That's just all there is to it.
Right. That, yeah.
That's all there is to it.
You know, okay, here's another downside to Apple not being there, which is even though you can get an Apple rep to talk to your company and work with your company to get Apple product in, you know, whether that's your desktop computers, your laptops, or your servers, that knowing that Apple was at the event and that you had the potential to get FaceTime with the people that are involved in those different departments within the company, that's been a big thing for many people. And for some people, that's the justification that they have for having their company shell out the money to send them to that event. Right. So, you know, it's what it comes down to for me is that it's very unfortunate that people are going to lose that FaceTime. I think that was a really important aspect of Apple being there.
But they don't – yeah, and you are, of course, correct. But I think we should stress, or at least I should stress, that I don't think Macworld will go away.
I agree with you completely. I think Macworld will continue on. It just will have – a little bit different focus than it's had in the past, simply because Apple is not there to be the focal point of everything that goes on.
And
that was
there are good sides and bad sides to that. I mean, IDG is no longer going to have to dance to Apple's tune.
That's true. They can now do anything they want with their own expo, which is weird when you think about it. Up to this point, they have had to cater to Apple with their own expo.
Yes. Yeah, well, which, you know, and again, it makes sense not only within the context of the fact that, of course, Apple is an obviously important partner to the concept of Macworld, but, you know, we're dealing with Steve Jobs in particular.
Right.
But, you know, now they're not going to have to. So, you know, of course, there aren't going to be as many people lining up for press badges, but, you know, it's going to be easier to get a press badge. It's going to be easier to show something that Apple doesn't care for. It's going to be easier to have. It's going to be easier for IDG to offer sessions that may not have otherwise been to Apple's liking.
Oh, sure. That's a really valid point. And I expect that a lot of the changes that will happen with Macworld Expo are going to be on the conference session side.
I would agree, and I think though that it's we can't underdescribe. I'm missing a word here, but we can't underdescribe the fact that the conferences are still going to be a very needed and valuable commodity.
I agree completely with that, and I think that it's actually lucky that when Paul Kent took over organizing Macworld Expo, that he really started pushing the whole session thing and making that a much bigger part of what the expo is. Had he not done that, I think that Macworld Expo and IDG would be in a very bad spot right now. But because of all the hard work Paul Kent has already done, they're in a much better position to be able to keep the expo moving forward in a healthy fashion. And hopefully that's exactly what will happen.
And I should also, this to me is a very important point. You know, people were just immediately talking about the fact that Apple pulled out, so the show's going to die, just like it did in Boston, and just like it did in Europe. And
I disagree with that.
And there's a huge reason why I disagree with that.
And let me tell you my reason, and then we'll see if we have the same reason. I think it is completely different for two things. First, there is no other expo to fall back on that Apple will be at. And second, the expo has morphed over the years to become more dependent on the special sessions that are running throughout the week.
Yeah, that's the first one, I think, is the big one. The difference between Macworld Boston and San Francisco is that there is not another show for anyone to fall back on.
So, you know, I never went to Macworld Boston, and the first year I was actually going to go was the year after Apple had left. And so I chose not to go to Boston simply because Apple wasn't going to be there, because I knew I could go see the Apple people in San Francisco like 6 months later.
Right. Well, yeah, a lot of people did that, especially people that are closer to California than they are to New York or Boston.
Right. And for me, it didn't matter because I'm in Denver. So it's a little bit farther to fly to Boston, but it's not that big of a deal. So I'm about halfway between.
Yeah, well, fair enough. All right, yeah, fair enough. But anyway, the long and the short of it is that Mackerel will probably get smaller. That's for sure. But I think that if anyone can keep the show together and relevant to people, it's going to be Paul Kent and the team he's put together there at IDG. And I think that the Mac community, the Mac user base, needs a show enough that it will survive without Apple. And, you know, quite frankly, Apple can go bork itself.
Just so you know, I totally pictured you dressed up completely as a Swedish chef when you said bork.
Bork. All right. So speaking of mea culpas, I was wrong.
Everyone pull out your red pen, circle the date on the calendar.
I've got a pretty good track record when it comes to predictions and analyzing rumors and stuff within the Mac universe, within the Apple universe over the last 10 or more years. But this is one that I just got wrong. And we're, of course, talking about Walmart selling the iPhone.
Yeah. You know, when I first heard the Walmart rumors, I said, no way, not happening. And I'm sure I said it here. I know that I said it on the iPhone Alley podcast. And yeah, well, I was a little bit wrong also, it appears.
Yeah, the way I put it was that there's no way Steve's going to let Walmart sell his precious iPhone.
Yeah, mine wasn't quite as colorful. I think mine was, no way, it won't happen.
But apparently that's not going to be. And I'm fascinated, though, that Apple is letting them discount it by $2.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, that actually caught me off guard, although it shouldn't have, because that's what Walmart does. They always drop the price on something, and if they can't drop it a lot, they drop it just a little bit. So apparently Apple was okay with that, which is not normal. Apple is pretty strict on how pricing is supposed to work with their products.
Well, with Macs and even iPods, I think it's $5. Probably less on these. I don't know. What does Amazon sell the Shuffle for? I'm going to look.
Yeah, let me see. The standard price for 1 gig Shuffle, I think, is $49.
Yep. And iPod Shuffle is it's $49.99, right, from Apple?
I thought it was $49 even.
I'm looking. I'm looking from 40. Yeah, okay, yeah. So Amazon does not discount the Shuffle. Actually, I see $48.72, $47.76, $47.50. Yeah, so they're like doing these little tiny discounts because Apple does control it. As a matter of fact, Apple controls their pricing at the retail level with its retail partners better than any other company on the planet, at least that I know of.
Yeah, it's pricing for Apple products is very consistent.
Yeah. And so for them to let Walmart sell it $2 off it's to me actually what it is. And this is, I'm going to be honest, folks. I've got a real attitude about Walmart in case you haven't already figured that out. for one thing, I don't like Walmart's business practices. I don't like the way they target mom and pops to put them out of business. I don't like what they're doing to middle America. I don't like the way they have been instrumental in shipping manufacturing off to third world countries. I don't like any of those things. I do not shop at a Walmart, although I certainly have in the past before I became a little more educated on the subject. I also don't like the way they pay their people. I don't like the way they were deliberately using illegal immigrants to do cleaning and things like that. I don't like the way they do union busting. So I have a massive attitude about Walmart. But part of that attitude, too, is about the level of training that they give to their people.
That's a concern for me with the iPhone.
Yeah, and that's actually why I didn't think that Apple would let Walmart sell the iPhone. It's that whole idea of, I mean, we're talking like, you know, Apple has now put the selling process for the iPhone in the hands of, you know, tens of thousands of people that Apple really has almost no control over.
Now, I haven't had a chance to go into a Walmart yet that has the iPhone for sale. And keep in mind, at the time of recording this, we're looking at, what, like maybe 36 hours potentially,
right,
that the iPhone's been available in Walmart stores. But from what I understand, they're supposed to have kiosks in the store. And so you can do most of the process by yourself at a kiosk.
Really?
That's the impression I'm getting. Now, if I'm wrong, well, of course, I'll be happy to tell everyone it was your fault. No, I'll be happy to fess up to that. But that's just from little things that I've seen, like on tweets and little blog snippets that show up in different Google searches that I do. So I don't know. But it sounds like there's going to be in-store kiosks, and then if you need additional assistance, like I would assume when you're finished with processing your transaction, then someone actually has to give you the box. Or if you need a little bit of extra help, then that's where the Walmart staff comes in. Although I have to question how much training they have.
I find it difficult to believe because at this point, we're talking, of course, not only about the product itself, but we're also talking about a contract.
And, right.
And I don't think many customers would be able to walk themselves through the sign up process or moving over your phone number, that sort of stuff.
You know what? I'm going to totally disagree with you on that. And I'm going to disagree with you based on how the whole process worked when the iPhone first came out.
But that's gone now.
I know, but if they set up something similar to that in a kiosk, then you could do the whole process just like it used to work.
True enough.
Now, whether or not that's really what's happening, of course, keep in mind, I'm trying to piece together bits of information based on reading a few tweets and seeing a couple very vague blog things.
Fair enough. And really, we're sort of just talking out of our rear ends right now because we haven't gone to check it out. But
yeah, it's crazy. It's like there's something big coming up that's eating all my time. Oh, that's right. Macworld's happening next week.
Macworld's coming up, yeah. Be that as it may, I was wrong. And by the way, if you're if you work at a Walmart and you're like a super stud at your job, more power to you. I'm not trying to insult every Walmart employee out there. I'm insulting the corporation. I'm insulting the amount of training that I think that they offer, at least from my interactions with the company in the past. I'm not trying to insult individual people that work there.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are a lot of really good people working at Walmart.
Of course there are.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like any company. And when you have a company as big as Walmart, I mean, they're fracking huge.
Yeah.
The likelihood that you're going to have even more good people there, it goes up simply by the number of people you have working for the company.
Yeah, I remember something about Walmart crossing the million employee mark.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was years ago. Years ago.
Man, they must have one serious hard drive somewhere to keep track of all those people.
Maybe even a couple of them.
So, could be.
On to practical things. It's there. I think that Apple is probably going to sell a lot more iPhones now.
I think you're right. And you know the rumor that was out for a while that Walmart was going to have an iPhone Nano, mm-hmm. like a $99 iPhone that's stripped down mm-hmm. in some way. I think that had some merit in that you could hit a demographic that wouldn't otherwise be able to get an iPhone. But now that all of this is played out and we can see what's really happening, that makes sense also because a $99 iPhone, I think, might have cannibalized higher-end sales more than Apple would have been comfortable with.
You know what? I actually disagree with that. I don't think that would have been an issue because the real cost of the iPhone is being paid by, at least in this country, AT&T.
Sure.
So if Apple sells a $99 iPhone at the retail level, Apple is going to have set that up so that they could still be making the same kind of margins that they make for these other units.
And that's a good point. The people that are pushing the beans around at Apple, they're not stupid.
Right. They are definitely not stupid. And but what I liked about the iPhone Nano idea is that it allowed Apple to put a cheaper, less expensive, slightly lower end product at Walmart's while, again, maintaining Steve's precious iPhone at the Apple Store. However, apparently Steve doesn't find it to be all that precious.
Apparently not.
And apparently he actually understands the idea of market share and reach and whatnot, and go figure. But
yeah, about that.
So the iPhone, I don't know. I think we'll still see an iPhone Nano at some point. Now, I have a friend, a very smart friend, who's in the finance industry, who thought that I was nuts if I thought that the iPhone Nano would be less expensive. He said that a smaller iPhone would be more expensive, and that it's going to be more of a premium product. And that's mainly because he thinks the iPhone is too big, to which I say, I like the screen. I will accept the size, but that's just me.
You know, I think the size of the iPhone is just fine, and a lot of that has to do with the screen. Another big part of that is the shape of the iPhone, especially the 3G, which I will admit, when I first saw the iPhone 3G, I was disappointed because I felt that it would not fit in your hand as well and feel as comfortable as the first generation model. And I was wrong. I prefer how the 3G feels.
Yep.
So the size, the shape, the weight, I think it works really well.
Hear, hear. All right. On that note, before we get on to the rest of the context machine, I think that we should take a second out to mention the fine folks at Smile on My Mac.
Dude, that was an incredible segue into the sponsor thing.
You like that?
That was good.
Fart.
No, that's not a Smile on My Mac product. Actually, the Smile on My Mac product we're going to talk about is DiscLabel.
DiscLabel, yes. And they're sponsoring us for this week's episode.
Right. And so if you're not familiar with DiscLabel, it's a really cool application that lets you design CD and DVD labels and sleeves for your jewel cases. And so you can customize everything the way you want. You can make really professional layouts. And then it has all the templates so that it knows how to fit everything onto whatever CD label sheets that you have. It does the hard part for you, unless you consider being creative the hard part, and then, well, it doesn't do that part for you. And it works with your iPhoto library, it works with Aperture, and it's a really great product. It really is.
And we actually have a timely thing that we can mention about that too, and that's that I'm guessing that a lot of our listeners took some movies over the holidays, shot some movies.
I'm betting you're right. And I'm betting that there's a percentage of our listeners that were supposed to go somewhere and couldn't because they were stuck because of all that crazy weather on the East Coast and, well, on the West Coast too. And so this would make a great way to be able to put together all those holiday videos and send them off to the friends and family that were stranded in airports or, if they were lucky, at home.
Right. So, you know, if that's your deal, if making movies and DVDs and stuff is your deal, you should really check this out. And we certainly appreciate the fact that they sponsored us this week. And we will have a link in the show notes for you to go get some information on DiscLabel from Smile on My Mac.
Yes. And I just have to add that I have a really cool Smile on My Mac mug, and I drink my juice out of it a lot of mornings.
Uh-huh.
It's really cool. And I have one, and
I don't.
You don't?
No.
It's a really cool thing, and it puts a smile on my face.
Well, that is good. Again, you have a smile on your Mac, so you might as well have a smile on your face too.
Yes, that's right.
And we actually do have a smile on our Macs. That's the funny thing.
We do. I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right. We do. Oh, how about that?
Yeah, how about that? Speaking of not smile, how about those fine folks at SciStar?
All right. So here's my take on the whole SciStar thing. Most of the news articles and blog entries and things that I've seen about this whole copyright thing and Apple didn't copyright macOS 10, it makes it out to be this thing where SciStar uncovered Apple's dirty secret, which is they were sloppy and didn't protect their property. And that's about as far as I've seen it go in most cases. And really, the first article that I ever saw that really went into what's really going on was yours. And
thank you.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, sure. And so if you haven't read the article yet, that to cut to the chase, this is a standard thing for a company to do when they're filing an answer to an amended claim. And
right. And there's basically, you know, they're throwing it is totally standard. This was suggested to us by an attorney that wishes not to be named.
Right.
And so we don't name him, but he's the one that said, you know, this is pretty much standard operating procedure. Really shouldn't be considered to be as crazy and wacky as it seems. But we did actually do the research, and sure enough, Apple filed the copyrights with the Library of Congress just like they're supposed to, which means nothing will happen with this.
Right. And my guess is that had that verbiage not been in the answer that SciStar had to file with the court, that someone in the court offices would have questioned the competency of the legal team representing SciStar, simply because that is such a standard thing to include. Had it not been there, it would have stopped them.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So nothing to see here. Move along. It's not going to amount to anything and doesn't matter. And the guys at SciStar, whoever's behind them, if there is someone behind them, are all going to just lose. If they don't lose, it'll be a devastating blow for business, a devastating blow that says that companies can't have proprietary systems.
Right.
And that's that. I mean, you know, do you really want for Microsoft's business model to be the model that we all have to live with? No, thank you.
Don't make me sad.
Yeah, I want these guys. I want them to lose. I want them to lose, and I want them to lose their shirts. It drives me nuts.
You know, I'm not an attorney, although I have played one on stage before. So here's my legal opinion: SciStar is pretty much screwed. I don't think they have a leg to stand on. Mm-mm. And this is. This is going to be an ugly, ugly time for them, and when the people that run the company look back on this years later, they're not going to laugh. It's not going to be that funny little thing. Oh, you remember when we took on Apple and they gave it to us up the butt? they're not going to be laughing about that.
Let's hope not. Let's hope not, because when I look at the state of the computing industry, when I look at all the healthy competition there was before Microsoft came and started licensing out MS-DOS, before they started licensing out Windows, when the companies that basically stole IBM's ROM, reverse engineered it, a judge at the time ruled that spirit of competition, I don't remember the exact wording, but basically I guess it was Dell that did it, right? They were the first cloners, weren't they?
No. I think it was Compaq.
Gosh, I can't remember. And maybe you're right. Whomever it is, that was such a setback for usability. Because when a company does control the hardware and the software, the end experience is better. There are people who want the cheap, crappy-ass Walmart approach for getting your crap for cheap. There are people that are out there that want that. It's not for me. I like the fact that Apple controls the hardware and the software.
Yeah, there is a percentage of the population that prefers or is okay with something that's just good enough. And in many cases, yes, it isn't just good enough, but the price was right, so they accept whatever the subpar product is and just move on.
Yes.
And I don't understand that. If for me, it doesn't matter if it's my computer, if it's the shoes that I'm going to wear. It doesn't matter. They're all products that need to be the best that they can be because I'm spending good money on them and they need to last.
Yeah, that's the way to work right. Life too. And you know what? I mean, Microsoft could make a better operating system if they weren't trying to make it for any and all comers. Windows would not suck so bad if they were making it for hardware that they controlled.
I think it also would be much better if they could break free from the legacy that they have, meaning the older applications, the older hardware, all of this old stuff that they're still having to support because they're dealing with computer yes. manufacturers that won't move beyond the old technology that they're using.
Right. I totally agree with that, man. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if we had, let's say, OS 2, Windows? I'll keep it simple. OS 2, Windows, Mac OS 10 today. I realized that we wouldn't have gotten to where we are with Mac OS 10 had that not happened back then. But just for the sake of argument,
okay.
If we had those three companies, IBM controlling OS 2, Microsoft controlling Windows, and Apple controlling Mac OS 10, everybody's making it for their own proprietary hardware. You've got Linux out there for the do-it-yourselfers. You've got umpteen flavors of Unix because those would still exist. I mean, we would be so much further along in what computers can do. But as it is, the licensing model that Microsoft took over the marketplace with destroyed innovation, certainly on the hardware side. And, you know, basically it made it so that no one can afford to do any R&D except for, you know, you've got Apple, Microsoft, and IBM and Intel doing R&D, but no one else can afford to do it anymore. You know, all that stuff was because of the crap that is the Windows ecosystem.
Well, innovation is a very risky venture. And if you're going for dominance through market share, you don't go for risk. You go for what you know is going to be able to take that market.
Yep.
And yep, if you don't have a product that can do that, then you find a way to make that product seem palatable to everyone so that it can become that product that you wish it was.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean the market dominant product, not an improved product.
Right. So for that reason, I hope PsyStar gets their ass kicked.
I'm okay with that.
All righty. Let's see. We have to talk about, what do we have left? We have to talk.
We have iFart. That's what we have left.
We have to talk. We have to talk iFart, don't we?
Yeah, we probably do. And I suddenly feel 12 again, and I'm just visualizing coffee shops all across the United States where people have this application loaded, and their iPhone is sitting on the table. And you know how the legs in coffee shop tables aren't leveled properly, so they always uh-huh. wobble? And uh-huh. someone's going to walk past, and they're going to bump all these tables, and you're just going to have a row of farting phones.
You know, bless Joel and his company for making a mint. You know, they made $100,000 in the last 2 weeks.
That's capitalism in action.
Yeah, it is capitalism in action, for better or worse. I don't know. There is a lot of crap out there on the App Store right now, but there is also some great applications made by dedicated developers who have done something either really cool or really useful, and in some few cases, both.
Right.
But it's a farting application that's been at the top of the App Store for the last couple of weeks.
You know, I think part of the reason for that is because we went through this phase where the Pull My Finger application and a mm-hmm. couple others were blocked mm-hmm. because of what type of application they are. And they would fall into the same group with iFart. Mm-hmm. And okay, I have to stop for a second. We're actually sitting here discussing a product that has fart in its name.
I know.
God. Okay. Anyhow, so when Apple allowed iFart onto the App Store, then it changed that whole thing about, oh, we're blocking certain kind of applications. And I think that's what makes this application a big deal. And it just so happens, because of the timing, that made it an application that everyone, or apparently everyone except for me, has rushed out to buy.
Exactly.
Have you bought a copy yet? No, you haven't. Okay.
No, I didn't. But I did like Sir Harry Flashman, one of our long-term forum members and commenters at the Mac Observer. He did a review of the app that I kind of thought was funny, and I'm clicking over to that right now. he said, okay, I just purchased it through one of the affiliate links, so I'll give a quick review. The good, there are a number of different types of fart sounds. The app did not crash the iPhone. When I was going through the various sounds, my beagle dog woke up from his nap and came in to see what was going on. Those are the three things under the good. Under the bad, he said, I was expecting more realistic sounds. While they are not bad and better than what Alex or Victoria can do with text-to-speech, I did not think that these were our real recordings. His second bad point was, a few types of farts are missing. Maybe they will add them in a later version. In particular, I was wondering, who cut the cheese and its close relative, One Cheek Sneak? That's a funny review to me.
Okay.
I'm gonna tell Harry that right now.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. All right. Well, that's enough of that. That's enough of that. Yeah. Let us instead move on to your quick tip.
I think that sounds like a much better place to go right now. All right. So this week's quick tip, there's a lot of people that don't like Spotlight because they don't get how it can work, or they're still using Tiger, and you need to be using Leopard to really appreciate Spotlight. Yep. Spotlight can search for all kinds of things, and you can tell Spotlight to hunt for just a specific type of item. And one place where that's really useful is if you use iCal and you need to look up events based on who's involved in them or other keywords that you might have included in those events. You can use Spotlight to do that. Now, if you just type in those keywords for your event, you get a long list of things that include other items. Maybe it's photographs, emails, whatever, that include those keywords. But if you use a special code along with your search terms, you can tell Spotlight what type of file to limit the search to, and that's the kind tag. So if I was going to search for iCal events, I would type in the terms that I wanted to include. Like I was talking about Comug earlier. So let's say I wanted to look up events that related to the Macintosh user group. I would type in Comug and then put a space so that Spotlight knows that I'm going to include more information. Then you type kind, K-I-N-D, put a colon, and then iCal, no spaces in there. So Comug, space, kind, colon, iCal. And what I've done is told Spotlight, look for all of the Comug events that are from iCal.
That's very cool. Similar to doing a search in Google where you might search on a specific site.
Exactly. And it'll give you a nice little list that shows just iCal events that relate to whatever it is that you were searching for. Click on the one you want, and it will open up iCal and show you that event.
That is very cool. Another very handy tip.
Well, I'm just doing my part to make your life easier.
Well, thank you.
And I think that actually takes us up to the next part, which is where I tell everyone, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And, of course, feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow my account at TMO Brian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Thanks, Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And of course, as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.